I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear the speech by Canadian professor Michel Chusadovsky, given at a conference in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, in November of 2012, called 9/11 Revisited, Seeking the Truth. Michel Chusadovsky is also the founder of the website globalresearch.ca, which is one of my favorite sites to learn about what's really going on in the world. He also has written a book about 9/11 and a book about the financial crisis, and both of them are available on the website globalresearch.ca. And here he is, Michel Chusadovsky.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished speakers, I think we are indebted to Tun Mahathir for having brought the agenda of 9/11 back onto the drawing board of debate. This is a historical decision because it is something which is increasingly forgotten in the coverage of the mainstream media, not to mention the political rhetoric underlying what is described as the global war on terrorism, which is called GWAT. So GWAT, what is GWAT? The tragic events of September 11, 2001 constitute a fundamental landmark in American history, a decisive watershed, a breaking point. September 11, 2001 opens up an era of crisis, upheaval. It is not only the events themselves, but as Tun Mahathir has indicated, it is the crimes committed in the name of 9/11. In other words, we must distinguish between the crimes of 9/11 and the crimes committed in the name of 9/11. And these crimes committed in the name of 9/11, which also involve a wave of Islamophobia, of demonization of Muslims, but also the destruction of entire countries, that is what is meant by the crimes committed in the name of 9/11, as opposed to the acts of destruction and the loss of life on the morning of 9/11. The two events are symbiotically related. They're two dimensions of a criminal process. I have had the opportunity of being involved now for almost 7 years with the Kuala Lumpur war crimes procedure, both the commission as well as the tribunal. And I wish to address, because initiative ultimately is intended to go towards a legal procedure. Okay? This conference is a preamble to a process of indictment of the war crimes committed in the name of 9/11. And these war crimes committed in the name of 9/11 are crimes against civilization. They're far-reaching because they involve the declaration of at least two major war theaters, one of which was Afghanistan, declared right in the wake, 3 weeks after, 3 or 4 weeks, 26 days after the event. And then you had, of course, Iraq. And in all of America's initiatives, its military initiatives, 9/11 has been the pretext and the justification on humanitarian grounds for going after the terrorists, okay? Notwithstanding the fact, known and documented, that Al-Qaeda is made in America. Please understand, Al-Qaeda is an intelligence asset of the Central Intelligence Agency. It is an instrument It was created in 1979 at the outset of the Soviet-Afghan War. And if you look at the history, you realize not only that Al-Qaeda is a creation of the CIA, but Al-Qaeda remains an instrument of covert warfare in different parts of the world. Al-Qaeda are the foot soldiers of NATO and the Western Military Alliance in places like Syria and Libya. To the extent that realities are twisted upside down, I started my research on 9/11 on the very day of 9/11 in an article which was called Who is Osama Bin Laden? And I understood from the very outset that if Osama Bin Laden were to be held responsible for 9/11, it followed pari passu that the CIA, as a state sponsor of Al-Qaeda, was possibly behind these horrendous acts. However, bear in mind, and I wish to dwell a bit on the chronology. On September 10th, talking about technology, on September 10th, according to Dan Rather, CBS News, Osama bin Laden was in a military hospital in Rawalpindi, Pakistan. Now, Rawalpindi is a military city, headquarters of the Pakistani military and intelligence. It's a place which is swarming with U.S. military advisors. You do not enter the urology ward of the Rawalpindi military hospital unnoticed. The Al-Qaeda leader, alleged Al-Qaeda leader, Osama bin Laden, was hospitalized on the 10th of September. Now, following Richard Gage's presentation, we should beg the question, how on earth did bin Laden coordinate these attacks from his hospital bed in the urology ward of the Pakistani military hospital, from his laptop, presumably? I suspect that they had Wi-Fi connection in the hospital, but this particular event, which was reported by CBS News, is crucial in understanding the chronology. Because, first of all, he was hospitalized on the 10th, which assumes that he was probably released the day after. Okay? Don't go into a hospital, come out. Released the day after, so that the question is, first of all, how could he himself have coordinated these attacks? And secondly, his whereabouts were known. And Donald Rumsfeld made the statement, and I cite textually, we don't know where he is. It's like looking for a needle in a stack of hay. Hello, Donald Rumsfeld. Osama bin Laden was in a Pakistani military hospital. Pakistan is a close military ally of the United States of America. The United States of America has an intelligence and military mission right within walking distance of the hospital, and you are telling us that you don't know where bin Laden was on September 11, 2001. And he certainly was not in Afghanistan, he was in Pakistan. So that is one important element in the jigsaw. Now let me get back to the chronology of 9/11. I'll start later in the evening. We've discussed the earlier part, the morning, but the evening is very important. On 9:30 p.m., a war cabinet is formed. There was no war cabinet. They create a war cabinet out of thin air. Early in the morning, CIA Director George Tenet confirmed, that was in fact at 11 in the morning, he said Al-Qaeda is behind it. Okay? Now, he had absolutely no evidence as to who was behind it, but he said Al-Qaeda was behind it. And the media response immediately on the morning of September 12th was to discuss who are the state sponsors of this attack. So the first of all, Al-Qaeda is held responsible with absolutely no evidence. And then at 9:30 in the evening, the war cabinet meets and the global war on terrorism is officially launched. And there is an official declaration of war against an impoverished country in Central Asia, namely Afghanistan, which allegedly attacked America. on September 11, 2001. Now, this fact is also something which the media, the analysts, or even the politicians have chosen to ignore, because both official statements as well as Western media reports say we will not make any distinction between the terrorists and the state sponsors of terror. And it was assumed that Al-Qaeda was supported by a foreign government, namely the government of Afghanistan, which the United States refers to the Taliban. Okay? The Taliban. And George Bush, during his election campaign, thought the Taliban were a rock group, but that's another matter. But what I'm trying to suggest here is that the War Cabinet, at 11 o'clock at night, took the decision to declare war on Afghanistan. The following morning, in Brussels, and if you bear in mind jet lag, time difference, virtually they were, the Atlantic Council met in Brussels on the morning of September 12th, local time, and took the decision to invoke Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, which states that an attack against one member of the Atlantic Alliance, namely NATO, is an attack against all members of the Atlantic Alliance under the doctrine of collective security. And what was implied by a tentative decision on the morning of September 12th by NATO was that the so-called Atlantic area was attacked by a foreign power, which was unnamed, but it was understood that it was Afghanistan. Okay? Now, by no stretch of the imagination, irrespective of our understanding of the events of September 11, whether we believe the official story or not, but under no stretch of the imagination was there any evidence that Afghanistan had attacked America. But in terms of legal decision-making, both the War Cabinet on September 11 at 11 o'clock at night, followed a few hours later, a.m., in Brussels, European Central Time, took the decision to wage war on Afghanistan based on Article 5, and they took on, I'll read a section of the resolution, if it is determined that the September 11, 2001 attack against the United States was directed from abroad against the North Atlantic area, it shall be regarded as an action covered by Article 5 of the Washington Treaty. Okay? So that NATO essentially declares war, at least tentatively declares war, against Afghanistan, which is a criminal act, a violation of international law, in the name of 9/11, on the morning of September 12th. Bin Laden was not in Afghanistan, he was in Pakistan, but also on the morning of September 12th, General Mahmoud Ahmad, who is the head of Pakistan's military intelligence, the inter-services intelligence, was in Washington, happened to be in Washington. It's a long story, I outline this in my book, which incidentally is available at the desk, America's War on Terrorism, that on the morning of September 12th, General Ahmad, who, according to press reports, including Reuters reports, was the so-called alleged money man behind the terrorists, was called to the State Department for meetings with Richard Armitage, Deputy Secretary of State, but also Colin Powell, and they asked him to act on behalf of the Pakistani government in going after the terrorists, in other words, participating in the war on Afghanistan. So you see right from the beginning how realities are twisted. The money man behind 9/11, the alleged supporters of Al-Qaeda, which is well documented, ISI, but also in liaison with the CIA, are invited to participate in the global war on terrorism on the one hand, and Afghanistan is accused of attacking America. Okay? I didn't see in any of the images Afghanistani planes coming and attacking America. But that is what is implied by the invocation of Article 5. Now, from September 12th onwards, several important events occurred. The Afghan government, through diplomatic sources, contacted the Bush administration on two occasions, saying that if there were any evidence, preliminary evidence, to the fact that Osama bin Laden were behind these attacks, they would gladly remit Osama bin Laden to the U.S. justice and law enforcement apparatus, okay? Now, these initiatives on the part of the Afghani, I don't use the term the Taliban, Afghani government, sovereign country, were made, they're on record. And George W. Bush responded, we don't negotiate with terrorists, okay? They brushed off the initiative of the Afghan government to deliver the alleged terrorist to U.S. justice, but no negotiations ensued. This is not to be surprised, because essentially 9/11, which is described in intelligence parlance as a massive casualty-producing event, creating countless civilian deaths, and also in the mindset of millions of people, the legitimacy and the pretext are there, okay? People didn't question the act, the declaration of war, because they were so much affected emotionally by the loss of life, particularly the American public, on the morning of 9/11. But essentially, what is at stake is that 9/11 was the trigger mechanism for the installation of the global war on terrorism, and the first stretch of this global war on terrorism was Afghanistan. Now, bear in mind, I don't know how many months it has taken to organize this conference. Flashback to 2001, anybody who has a minimal understanding of military planning or conference planning will tell you don't organize a large-scale theater war thousands of miles away in Central Asia in a matter of 26 days. Impossible. From the 11th of September to the 26th to the 7th of October, 26 days, you do not put together the logistics of a major theater war, invasions, warplanes, naval deployment, and so on and so forth, going after Osama bin Laden, allegedly in the Tora Bora Mountains. In other words, and there were press reports to that effect, this war was in the final stages of preparation prior to the advent of the 9/11 attacks. And that's absolutely fundamental. The military analysts, again, the same as, you know, same as the official investigators of the causes of the collapse of the towers, didn't come to the most obvious conclusion, hey, hello, you don't plan a theater war in 26 days, okay? Let alone an international conference on 9/11, which we've been planning for months. So that the war on Afghanistan was in the pipeline well before 9/11. 9/11 was the trigger to wage this war, and this again was something which was withheld from the broader public. People didn't ask, didn't beg that question. Now, on the morning of September 12, 2001, when the Atlantic Council met in Brussels, they indeed invoked Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, collective defense. It's an act of self-defense to go and attack Afghanistan, but they said, we must have proof that, in effect, that both Al-Qaeda as well as Afghanistan were behind this attack, and they, in a sense, requested the U.S. State Department to follow up on that, and the State Department appointed, a few days later, an individual called Frank Taylor. Now, Frank Taylor was a senior U.S. State Department official. He was entrusted with writing a brief. He was a consultant to establish whether the U.S. had been attacked from abroad, okay, which is the legal term of Article 5, whether the United States had been attacked from abroad, which visibly anybody who had looked at the images say, no, it hasn't, okay, whatever one's interpretation of these events. And so that U.S. Ambassador at Large, Frank Taylor, briefed the North Atlantic Council. It took him 2 weeks to do his report, okay? And on the 2nd of October, which is 5 days before the commencement of the bombings, he briefed the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council had already ordered the deployment of large-scale weapon systems to Central Asia, even before 9/11. But on the 2nd of October, he handed his brief to NATO. And this brief, to this date, remains classified. It was never released either to the press or to any, so that when Secretary General Lord Robertson summarized the substance of the brief, but the brief was never published. We intend to get hold of that brief. And he then said on the morning of October 12th, yes, we now confirm the decision that we took on September 12th to attack Afghanistan and to initiate the global war on terrorism. And 5 days later, it was all-out war against Afghanistan. Now, let me flash forward, because in effect, if you look at U.S. military doctrine, which was totally revamped in the wake of 9/11, you will see that all the so-called enemies of the United States, including Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, and many more, which were on the list of General Clark, you know, the famous list of countries which are on the roadmap for U.S.-led war. When the war on Iraq was in its advanced stage of readiness in the early months of 2003, Colin Powell, Secretary of State Colin Powell, presented a justification to the United Nations Security Council which essentially pointed to the fact that the secular government, Ba'athist government of Iraq, was supporting the terrorists. And he presented this based on an intelligence report allegedly prepared by British intelligence, but in fact it turned out that this report was a fake report which had been prepared by public relations officers in Tony Blair's office. We've investigated, it was actually copied off the internet, and that was used as a pretext and a justification to trigger a war on Iraq, the weapons of mass destruction, but also the fact that the government of Saddam Hussein was supporting Al-Qaeda-affiliated organizations in northern Iraq. So that there again, the fabrication, the underlying fabrication that Iraq is a state sponsor, was a state sponsor of terrorism. In fact, the only state sponsor of terrorism is the United States of America, because they created Al-Qaeda. Now, I will skip forward. This was still a very important incident in the timeline, namely that the war on Iraq, with all its devastating consequences, was also a war which was waged in the name of 9/11. It was waged in the name of 9/11. And that's why 9/11 truth is so important, because without 9/11, the whole construct collapses like a deck of cards. Their military doctrine, if you look at military documents, you'll see the extent to which 9/11 is embedded and is the criterion for decision-making. Now, let's go a little bit forward. Iran. This is not well known, but Iran is also accused of complicity together with Hezbollah, apart from the fact that, you know, Shia versus Sunni, but they are complicit in supporting Al-Qaeda as well, and they have a complicit role in the 9/11 attacks. And undoubtedly, at one point, this is going to be used, or it might be used, by the Obama administration as a pretext, as some other fabricated pretext to wage a broader war in the Middle East. And in December of 2011, it's rather recent, the Islamic Republic of Iran was condemned by a Manhattan court in a civilian suit by the alleged victims of 9/11 for its alleged role in supporting the 9/11 hijackers. And this court judgment, which took something of the order of 6 years to achieve under the U.S. District Judge George B. Daniels, ruled that Iran and Hezbollah materially and directly supported Al-Qaeda in the September 11, 2001 attacks and are legally responsible for damages, etc., etc. The irony is that President Ahmadinejad, who is himself an has an engineering architecture background, when he made a statement to the United Nations Security Council, actually endorsed, more or less endorsed, the position of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. All of this points to endless fabrications, criminal fabrications, to use 9/11 mythology as an instrument not only to demonize Muslims, but to wage a war of conquest. I should emphasize that the demonization of Muslims has to do with the very simple observation is that three-quarters of the world's oil and gas reserves happen to lie in Muslim lands, okay? And that the region between the tip of Saudi Arabia and the Caspian Sea Basin has 60% of global oil and gas reserves. And if you add up, it comes to something like between 65 and 70% of global oil and gas reserves lies in Muslim countries. And therefore, we are demonizing, they are demonizing the inhabitants of the countries where the oil happens to be and which they want to conquer through military means, using 9/11 as the pretext. This is a very important consideration, and it bears in mind the fact that the United States of America only has 1.8% of global oil reserves, as opposed to some 70% which lie in Muslim countries. We must, and I'll conclude, we must understand that the criminal project of waging war in 9/11 is a crime against civilization. It's a war crime, but it's also a crime against civilization. It is a pretext for ushering in an Orwellian police state apparatus in most Western countries, in legalizing extrajudicial killings, in legalizing torture. But at the same time, it affects the human mindset, human consciousness, comprehension, the ability to establish ties of solidarity with one another in a multi-ethnic global community. And this is a process also of political indoctrination, of brainwashing, and people's capacity to think independently and analyze world events is affected. And ultimately, what we have to do is to break this consensus, which is a very fragile consensus, that 9/11 bears a justification for an Anglo-American NATO-Israeli military adventure, which in real terms affects the future of humanity. And that is why 9/11 truth is so important, and that is why this conference is the first step in the process of establishing a legal initiative to criminalize the architects of the 9/11 events and the global war on terrorism. Thank you very much.
And again, that was a speech by Professor Michel Chusadovsky, founder of the website globalresearch.ca. He was speaking at the 9/11 conference in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, that took place this past November 2012. To view the videos of all the speakers from that conference, you can go to YouTube and search for Kuala Lumpur and 9/11 Revisited. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.